Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. Each week, I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time, encouraging you to reflect on your own leadership journey. You can subscribe for free to the podcast on iTunes or on Castbox. Look for the Leadership Journey Podcast. And if you like, you can leave a review. This week, David Dunlop, pastor of Windsor Baptist Church in Belfast, is back with us. He talks about some of the things that have shaped him as a Christian leader, including the role of the Arrow Leadership Course. And he talks about the day that someone asked him what he was doing to guard his heart. There's a lot of great practical wisdom in what David has to share with us, so enjoy the podcast. David, welcome back.
Thank you.
And again, thanks for your time. In the first part of our conversation, we got you to Windsor Baptist.
Okay.
Now reluctantly. We discovered it was a bit of a Moses there of you know, almost God, can you just not send somebody else to this? And a number of interesting things around that, I think, both about how you see yourself as a reluctant church leader. But also, I mean, maybe one thing to start off by picking this up is this business of the call that you talked about. And obviously for many people, it's a, and you mentioned the Arrow folk, and I know James Lawrence and with his book, Growing Leaders and so on, we put a lot of emphasis on this, on the sense of call. For you, it's not been like that, of some blinding light in the sky, David, you know, go into ministry, David, go to Windsor Baptist. But yet you've got a strong sense of priority in life. What God is calling you to, if I could put it like that. Do you want to talk a little bit about how some of that has fallen into place for you?
I mean, you're right in saying the language of call, I have always been slightly nervous of and wary of, and maybe that's because it just, you know, as I think whenever people do ask me things like, tell us about your call to, I struggle to answer that because I find that my, where I am today and how I got to where I got, it's kind of been an evolving story. And where other people have identified things and, you know, encouraged me in particular directions, and whether they have heard my call, I don't better than I have.
God loves you and everybody has a
exactly. So I so there's been an evolving thing for me,
right?
But at the same time, and I would want to be very clear, I mean, because the natural question is in, like, could it be you're not in the right place, you're not doing the right thing, or whatever, but I have a real sense of peace that I am, like, in a sense, you know, in the right place at the right time, and where I'm meant to be. So, and that's been part of a journey for me. So whenever I did Arrow, so the Arrow thing, where that came out of, I had a sabbatical in 2001. And I went off to Canada as part of that. And when I was there, I had a friend who was there ministering in a church, and I'd asked him, could he line me up with some meetings with people who he thought it would be good for me to connect with during the time of sabbatical. And the first person that he lined up for me to have lunch with was Leighton Ford, who meant some will know as, you know, heads up Arrow, Canada, and all of that. So. No, not Leighton Ford. I got that wrong, because it was Leighton Ford who did it. It was Carson Pugh who headed. Sorry, Carson Pugh who headed up.
Yeah.
Leighton Ford founded Arrow, and Carson Pugh was the kind of key guy who delivered it.
Author of a book on mentoring.
Author of a book on mentoring, but he was the kind of head of Arrow Canada and North America and all that. So Carson Pugh was someone that my friend lined up a lunch conversation with. I didn't know him from Adam, sort of thing. But had a fascinating conversation with him around the whole issue of leadership and leadership development.
Yeah.
And obviously as somebody who had had the sense of evolving ministry and role and call and all these things, to have that conversation was significant. And so I came away from that, discovering what Arrow was and thinking, wow, the whole idea of looking at character, calling, competency, but also their other little strap line, which you're probably familiar with, you know, to lead more like Jesus, to be led more by Jesus, and to lead more to Jesus. There was just so much of what Arrow were about that kind of really struck a chord. And so I came up back from Canada, headed off to Wales, to Cardiff, to what I think it was the Evangelical Alliance conference in Cardiff, where I met James Lawrence and connected with him.
Intentionally met him, or it just happened that he was there?
He happened to be there, right. And I just went, obviously having had the conversation with Carson Pugh in Canada literally about 3 weeks before this, and then he going to this conference and hearing that one of the people or one of the stands or one of the seminars was about leadership by a guy called James Lawrence from Arrow Leadership. I just went, right, I've got to go and chat this person. To discover, you know, that Arrow ran in the UK, because Carson Pugh had said that, and then met the person who was running it, and so going. So, you know, that coming out of that sabbatical was the decision to do Arrow.
And did you do Arrow fairly much straight after that?
Yeah, more or less. It was 2002, 2003. So right. The sabbatical was kind of the autumn of 2001. And then I started Arrow about nearly a year later, just after the application process.
And some people listening will know a bit about Arrow. Yep. I mean, Clive Atkinson, who
was
on the podcast so long ago, is also a graduate of Arrow. But for those who are not familiar with it, tell us a little bit about the basic concept. How does it work? What's it trying to achieve?
Okay, so in terms of where it really started from, it was this idea that people were coming out of maybe theological training centres and colleges and all that, going into church leadership, but in North America particularly, Canada and North America, over a period of time, and this was where Leighton Ford came in, they noticed a number of leaders kind of like crash and burning, going out of leader. And most of the time, it centred around these issues of character called incompetency issues, as opposed to theological training that had gone to become heretics, and so they recognise here is an area of leadership development that seems to be missing or could be augmented. So Arrow was launched to kind of try to fill a void, almost, it was seen. And so it's a 2-year programme, and it was specifically for people who were in leadership. It's not for potential leaders, it was for people who are leaders.
Who've been leading for a wee while.
Who've been leading for a period of time. Ideally, I think they've always said between the ages of 25 and 45 was who it was for, but I think that can be reasonably flexible. So people who are in leadership, again, primarily church-based leadership, but also para-church leadership ministry and things like that. So the idea is that you go on this program along with roughly 20 other people, leaders, and it's a 2-year program which consists of 4 1-week residentials. You also meet with a peer group who are doing the program with you. I think it is once in between each residential, and you have a mentor for the 2 years of being. So you continue doing what you're doing in whatever your role is, in wherever it is, but you do this then as a 2-year course alongside that, but it requires that time commitment.
And is it structured largely around those three things?
Around the three things of character, calling, competency, and around the idea of leading more like Jesus, leading more to Jesus. Right. So things like evangelism, leading more like Jesus, and you know all of that. So yes, those are the values in a sense that frame the residentials and what is looked at in those residentials.
Right. How formative was that for you?
Hugely for me.
Can you begin to describe in specific ways, or is it... that's not an easy question to answer.
Well, I mean, for me, so I did this 2002, 2003. So this is before Windsor.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm halfway through Ballinahinch. Yeah. I'm in Ballinahinch. I've had the sabbatical, so I've been serving in Ballinahinch for over 7 years, and the church has very kindly granted us a sabbatical to go away and kind of just take a bit of a step out and look at things. And so, you know, I was aware that here I was, and it's back to this thing of calling, you know, here I am 7 years serving the church, never saw this coming, not sure where the future holds, but I recognise within myself that I, you know, I'd never been to Bible college, I know I require input. I know I require teaching. I know I require. I have so much more learning to do, and so this just was an opportunity that came at the right time to discover more about leadership. And so, doing those 2 years and being part of, now as I say, although Arrow now runs in Ireland, at that time it didn't. So I had to go across to Sheffield for those 2 years. Right. That's where I went, and so I was the only person from Northern Ireland. I was also the only kid. Baptist and all of that, but
it would largely be Anglicans.
Yeah, it was, and many. I mean, people, a bit more diverse now. But I suppose at that time, because Arrow was run by James Lawrence, who worked for CTAS, so it was much more, more Anglicans were doing it. But it was just a really formative time, because I think
partly having a mentor for those 2 years who was David McMillan. So that was the irony of it.
So there was a Windsor connection.
So there's a Windsor connection there, and this is where, you know, that but you know, you, yeah. So David was my mentor for the 2 years. Mm-hmm. So having time to sit with a mentor and with somebody once a month for a 2 year period who is involved in church leadership, mm-hmm. because David was pastor at Windsor Pastors, just to sit alongside and to learn from and listen to and to offload to and all of that. But also to gather with other people for those, and those were pretty intense residentials. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they were hard, there was hard stuff happening to those, you know, they were pretty honest and raw and open. They were brilliant. So they were really formative in terms of the nature of leadership, the important, but the aspects of it, and things like character, mm-hmm. really, again, I've always, has been a huge thing for me, the importance of character.
Mm-hmm. How has that come to be?
Because I think the people that have been influential in my life, or just as I look around me, it's people whose character just like screams that really impacts me.
Yeah,
it's just to see authenticity, integrity.
Yeah,
they are who they say they are.
Yeah,
there's just a reality, and I've always just, and the importance for me in terms of Christian faith of character. It has again, just those nine segments, if you like, the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. I've always, for me, those are the key defining things. So authenticity, integrity in terms of Christian faith, I want to see those things growing in my life. Mm-hmm. I want to see those things growing in other people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so not always what they say, but just as these characteristics, are they becoming more and more evident? And the whole integrity thing, and we've all seen that illustration, you know, the sticker rock where you read Portrush or whatever around the top of it, and no matter where you break into it, you still read Portrush. Yeah. And it's that whole thing of, well, wherever you break into my life, mm-hmm. not just on the Sunday, not just in the pub, and not just in the meet, wherever you break, do you still read? Mm-hmm. You know, integrity, you still read Jesus and all that. So character, those things are really important to me, Alan, and always have. So that's why it resonated. And so learning about that and having that affirmed and confirmed for 2 years in this program just made so much sense to me. And competency as well. And I mean, I to learn to be a competent leader.
Yeah.
You know, and now, most of the time, I feel I'm totally incompetent. But they learn the importance of competency in leadership, that it's not, again, being a leader, and particularly leader in a, where people are involved. Mm-hmm. Competency is massively important.
How did you reconcile your own journey then with the emphasis that was being put on calling?
Well, you can speak to it was for the 2 years I was on the programme, Alan, it was the one, you know, we there used to be times when I can remember one evening in one of the residentials where the issue of calling was really being kind of looked at and talked about and thought about, and there was various visuals and stuff, and I just really was struggling, could not connect, and so it was something that in a sense Ara were aware of, mm-hmm. and the guys who were the leadership team on those residentials were aware of this for me was a this was a difficult one to really own and not identify with in the broadest sense, but specifically identify with the way others were able to articulate it.
Yeah.
You know, as I sat in a room sometimes and listened people articulate their clear sense of God, and obviously we're all aware, you know, people say, well, see, you know, when the hard times hit, unless you're clear on your call, you're never going to survive. And so I had those sort of things rattling around my head, which has constantly, you know, had me going, I'm not, as I said, I have a piece of it being in the right place, but there's also times I go, I don't know if I can survive. I don't know if I can do this anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and if, you know,
where do you go then? I don't mean you leave and go somewhere else, but how do you process it? Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, so I think, and maybe this is
tend to kind of introduce another kind of key thing that came out of sabbatical 2001, and which is probably something a number of people are aware of in my life for various reasons. So 2001, one of the conversations I had with a person on sabbatical went along the lines of, didn't know this person, meeting them for the first time in a coffee shop in Vancouver, and looked over the table at me and said, "So, David, what are you doing to guard your heart?" And like, kind of, you know, bit taken back by the question and just the directness at one level. What are you doing to guard? And again, looked, didn't have an answer, or at least I didn't have an answer that I felt stacked up at any level. But one of the things I kind of relatively quickly came back at him was going, it's not that I don't understand the question, but why that question, and what exactly?
You'd not met this person before?
No. So this was somebody else. I say I had a friend in Canada who had set me up with a number. So this was a person who just, he felt was a good person to meet on a time of sabbatical to maybe probe a bit. I don't know. But that was the question he asked me. David, what are you doing to guard your heart?
That's certainly probing.
Well, it was a real probing question. And I mean, I thank God for that person and for that question. But so I didn't have an answer, and I asked them, or at least I didn't have an answer stacked up. I could come out with a few, which I knew were just, in a sense, trite answers. But I said, like, why are you asking me that question? And so he turned me to Proverbs 4:23, where, you know, above all else, guard your heart, and then depending on your choice, for it affects everything else you do. So he said, okay, so if above all else, so this is pretty important, and it affects everything else you do as a associate pastor, as a husband, as a dad, as a son, as a brother, as a football player, as a book reader, as a TV, it affects everything else you do. Above all else, guard your heart, because it affects. So, is that not an obvious question? Because if this affects everything else you do, what are you doing to guard your heart? And I realised, wow, that just... So, that has become my life verse. Those 12 words. That kind of gem of biblical wisdom has become my life verse.
It's interesting that I was at a meeting earlier today here in the Bible College, and Ken and Helen Clark were here, and they're talking about emotionally healthy spirituality.
Yeah.
And that very issue is one of the things that they put out there. The same thing. It almost sounds like that you either met Pete Scazzaro in Vancouver, or that they know the person that you were talking to.
So going back to your question, sorry, about where do you go with those kind of like angst about calling, or about I don't know if I can do this anymore, or all of that? I keep going back there. What am I doing to guard my heart? Because it affects everything.
How would you answer that question today then?
in a number of different ways. So one of the things that's become very important to me, I mean, and the whole issue of spiritual disciplines, actually, and holy habits, I prefer, isn't it, Mark Buchanan, who coins that phrase, as opposed to spiritual disciplines. But the practice of spiritual disciplines in terms of guarding your heart. So spiritual formation and that type of language. But
do you are there particular practices that you have found to be especially helpful?
I mean, there's the kind of, I said, the standard is almost the wrong word to use in terms of the spiritual disciplines, but like, you know, prayer and engagement with God's word and meditation and scripture and those sort of things. Another thing that has been important for me in guarding heart is I have attempted to kind of live to, I suppose it's maybe too strong, but a rule of life. So the whole idea of rhythm in life, and having rhythms in life, and those are rhythms around things like spiritual disciplines, but around self-care, around how, like, I look after myself, boundaries, time, all of that. So I found that having a rule of life, and not that you stick rigidly to, but silent retreat. I go on an annual 48-hour silent retreat, mm-hmm. and all those. So a lot of those rhythms are a key part of what, for me, means to guard my heart. Mm-hmm. Other things, in terms of leadership, in my darker moments, I define church leadership as living to other people's expectations. Mm-hmm. And so part of guarding my heart in that is being aware mm-hmm. of perceived expectations. Mm-hmm. And things like making sure you don't... I mean, humility is a massive thing around us, but making sure you don't have a swelled head when praised and a crushed spirit when criticised. Because part of leadership, both of those things are kind of in there somewhere, mm-hmm. and maybe not as extreme as that, but you know, a lot of people can at times say nice things, mm-hmm. and you can believe your own whatever, mm-hmm. And so, you know, that whole thing of I can't remember the song, Delirious, I think, sing a song about, you know, we carry pride like a disease. And I think in church leadership, whenever things are going alright and you're doing okay and there's people about and mm-hmm. people are saying nice things and all of that, pride is so easy to carry. And so for me, guarding my heart is this is what it's involved, is a constant check mm-hmm. on those things.
Does that involve other people as well who speak into your life?
Yeah, it does to a certain extent. I mean, I've had various people in my life, you know, obviously during Arrow there was a very intensive time of having a mentor for a couple of years. I've had other times when I've journeyed with a friend who's been almost like an accountability type mm-hmm. partner, where they've, you know, I've given them permission to, although that's happened for seasons. It's not been a consistent thing over life. I've had other people who I kind of like just draw alongside sometimes. And I mean, obviously part of Senate Treat and going once a year down to the Benedictine guys, I mean, one of them is somebody who I mm-hmm. kind of enjoy once a year. Mm-hmm. Just being open and honest with and letting them speak into my life and mm-hmm. stuff. So,
like a spiritual director.
Yeah, almost like a spiritual director, but I'm just nervous about some of the terms I got but yes, they are. They're just people who I value mm-hmm. and who have been kind of part of my story and journey over a number of years. May not know me particularly well, but know me enough to know this is part of my rhythm of life, and therefore are happy enough to ask me questions. And so yeah, so there are other people who call me on this, but I mean, one of the, like my relationship with Glennis, mm-hmm. you know, that is one of the key, that is the key in a sense, relationship in terms of guarding my heart and mm-hmm. what that looks like for us, and Glennis speaking into my life, and I mean, we're married 27 years, but things like time together, and we have a day off together, and have done ever since, you know. And so Monday is guarded, like, but having those things, those are the things that guard my heart, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in leadership and keep me grounded. And I suppose one of the other things is I have a couple of really good friends who keep me very grounded, mm-hmm. who make sure I remember exactly who I am in terms of, you know, never to get ahead of myself. So all those things, but that idea of guarding my heart mm-hmm. is pretty good.
That's really helpful, David. Thank you for sharing that mm-hmm. and you know, sharing so personally about it. Going back to your, you know, maybe the picture of your leadership journey, mm-hmm. the idea of being a reluctant leader, not mm-hmm. that, well, I don't really want to be here to be your pastor.
Do
you know, absolutely. Who am I to be doing this? Yeah. How has that evolved over 10 years in Windsor?
Yeah, that
that's a very good question, Al. And you know, as I think back to 2008, when I did come along, and there was that sense of I come here reluctantly, but as you say, not as an I don't want to be your pastor, you know, in any sense a negative, but just I feel out of my depth, I feel well out of my comfort zone. I don't know if I can do this, like, because obviously one of the key things was the whole area of preaching, teaching. You know, that was a key part of my responsibility in coming as pastor at Windsor. That was one of my main responsibilities. Was, and yet, never been to sermon class in my life. Had spoke a bit of Ballinahinch increasingly, but the idea of coming in this was going to become part of a consistent. Mm-hmm.
And so when I stepped into it, Alan, in the sense, you know, as I look back and I'm here 10 years as an Alan, I can't quite believe I'm still here. I can't quite believe I'm still here 10 years later doing what I'm doing, and that there's still a church and there's still some people about.
Of course, that's serious understatement.
But do you know, I mean, I hope that has not come across in any sense of like false humility, but I'm just trying to be honest. In that I have constantly battled, and I mean, even that whole thing about like speaking and stuff like that, because I've never been to sermon class in my life, haven't been to Bible college formally. I mean, I'd done the 2 years in the Oasis Youth Ministry course, where one day a week we had the Cambridge Diploma in Religious Studies lectures, and that, I mean, that's a decent, you know, qualification, and the exams at Spurgeon's, but that was part. So I've always, you know, I've just always felt not like an imposter, that's far too strong, but I just felt I am so way in over my head, and I have no clue why anybody would kind of like want to listen. Do you know? And people will be losing the will to live, and here we are 10 years later, and there's still people listening to you speak. Like, what's that about? I don't. So I've wrestled with it all, and I'm really just being honest, and I continue to.
Have you tried? You know, have you gone looking for like training courses or anything like that?
No,
or
I haven't.
Have you settled on a way of speaking that is you?
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, that is the thing. I cannot think of settling. Maybe people listening to this and others may go, well, I think it would do you the world of good to go and actually explore some stuff.
As I said to you before we recorded this, a former student from the college spoke to me just before we started this interview to tell me about something that you'd said at a chapel service here at some point in the past that has stuck vividly with him and has meant a huge amount to him in his life. So, David, you know, and I know from experience, you conducted the wedding for one of my daughters, and you know, and I heard you preach. I've heard you preach once in Windsor, and you have an ability to allow Scripture to speak for itself. And I think that's so important. And maybe that's because you don't feel you've come in as an expert, so you're thinking, I just need to let the Scripture speak.
Yeah, I think that's thank you. That's very helpful, actually. And I think there is an element of that. I mean, you said about, do you ever think of going and doing other things? I think I've come to a place, although I oscillate on this, but I come to a place of going, this is who I am. I am who I am, okay? And my identity in Christ and clear on and the child of God and that. But when it comes to me speaking and sharing, I just want to, like, I want to take God's word and try to let it speak for itself. I don't want to get in the way of it. But I do it just out of who I am, in a sense, as opposed to a way of doing it that...
A technique.
Yeah. Right? So I know that in terms of my style of speaking or whatever, people say, well, your style is probably pretty conversational, or I'm not somebody who, like, it's pretty in some ways monotone. I'm not overly passionate or demonstrative. I'm also not big on stories. I don't tell many, you know, I don't give many illustrations and stuff. I just and there's part of me over the years where people have said, actually, we can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Not in a, like, but we can appreciate that, and therefore I've in some ways been reluctant to go, right, I need to do this differently. Mm-hmm. Now, I still always feel well out of my depth and totally dependent, which is always a good thing anyway, but not to the point of going, I really need to do this differently, because I don't know if I do, because then I'm not sure it would maybe veer into lacking integrity, because I'm doing it in a particular way, of a technique, rather than actually, until the point where, you know, and I
their makeup were just not sure you really this is resonating and you have anything more to say and you need to kind of like stop.
You know, so it's that tension of being wanting to be me. I am who I am. This has evolved. I passionately believe God has been in that evolvement, and therefore, I am so grateful to Him for taking the raw material and doing something with it.
But isn't it so encouraging though that as you've worked on this principle of guarding your heart, that you know, out of the overflow of your heart has come this. This ministry, which God has blessed, which is I think it's a wonderful example, and maybe even for other leaders, and not least younger leaders who might be listening to this, that rather than put your emphasis on honing all of these techniques, guard your heart and allow God to develop whatever ministry He wants out of the person that you become.
I think that's a great kind of way of capturing it.
What have been some of the other big challenges that have, or defining moments that have shaped you, you know, during the past 10 years, or maybe at other times?
I mean, it's hard to pinpoint specific moments and all. I suppose in church leadership, you go through things, whether they're specific situations or seasons in the church, where you're just aware of your need of God's help and together alongside other people. Because one of the things I value about leadership is the idea of team, and being in this together with others and not feeling a total sense of everything rests upon, because that is very. That is not the case at Winton. That is not the model that's there. So as I look back, I can think back to seasons and situations that have evolved, that have meant we've kind of got a really, not bed down, but we've had to talk things through, work things through, pray things through. But it's not necessarily been where we've reached in it. It's been the process of going through it that has been so helpful, where people have just, like, there's been an honesty and an openness, and but underpinning all that sense of we're in this together and unity that I have found really beneficial as I look back over, and so feel affirmed in leadership for that reason, that actually this is shared, and I've learned a lot through that.
What have you tried to do in order to build a sense of team or maintain a sense of team?
Well,
what do you think is important in relationship?
Yeah, I think one of the things, Alan, I would say about Windsor is I can remember, one of the early conversations I had before I came to Windsor with the elders. It was the front room of one of the guys' houses, and there was maybe about 6-7 of us sitting around. And I mean, I could quickly discern sense there was team here. And one of the comments that was made is, as a pastor, we kind of see pastors first amongst equals, that type of language. And in 10 years, I mean, this is the thing, as I now look back, I have seen the reality of that.
Right.
So I don't in any way feel it's anything I have hopefully continued to facilitate, but it has been a way of doing and being that has been there. And that's the likes of Dave McMillan before me, Roy McMillan before, who were those type of leaders as well, who brought people together, not people who were all the same at all, but where there was kind of like trust, and there was we're in this together sense of we're two or three are gathered, there's politics, this is about
Jesus.
And this is about being God-centered, and all the other stuff that sometimes comes along with church leadership. Sometimes I can honestly hand on heart say in 10 years of being just like seen it dealt with hand so brilliantly. So I am thankful to God, and sometimes I realize, and this is where I see God's hand particularly, that it, with all my angst and calling and all those like feelings of inadequate and out of my depth and out of my comfort zone and all,
that I'm not sure I could survive anywhere else other than Windsor Baptist. Right. In terms of what the style and of leadership and that is there, and the people that are there, and the support and all of that, that in a sense, therefore, I was a kind of good fit. But if I went somewhere else, I'd probably
If you gone somewhere who was looking for a more traditional solo type, do everything, that wouldn't have suited you.
Not in this,
probably having been at Windsor for 10 years, it's probably helped to solidify you in terms of, you know, your own convictions about leadership and your own style. Because I think I've often thought that the place we minister shapes us.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, probably as much, if not more, than we shape it.
I would say, that way around, definitely, definitely. You know, I do. I am grateful to God for the opportunity to share, and I said to you more. I do feel it's been, it has been, you know, it has shaped me profoundly, and people who have been part of that, who have shaped me profoundly in terms of just the way I've done. And I think, you know, if I was to summarize it as I see it at Windsor, and it probably just resonates with me, is the whole idea of servant leadership.
Right.
That's the model I think that exists. And so. For me, going back to some of the stuff I said, the character and garden part and all that, that kind of just fits. And so, the idea of servant leadership, I just, again, I think is a key. And that was something that certainly was affirmed at the time of Arrow. I remember reading, one of the first books we had to read on was once, I can't even remember the author, but it was called Servant Leadership. I remember reading that was the first, you know, and that again has just stuck with me on this turn, is how important servant leadership is.
David, we're almost at the end of our conversation here, but just in the last few minutes, let's imagine you've got young David and Glenys, and you're standing at the front of the church, you know, getting married, and you're able to speak to young David and Glenys. And looking ahead to the leadership journey that you're going to be on, what would be two or three of the things that you'd want to say to that young self?
Well, one of the things I know we didn't do as part of the interview, but was whenever we started in London, whenever the pastor, Paul Merton, who was the pastor at Horn Church Baptist, who we were working alongside those years, I can remember him sitting us down and just saying, okay, here you are starting out on this, and this is us as 20 or something, David and Glenys, you're starting out on this journey of training and ministry in a local church. He said, your relationship with God has got to be number one. Your relationship with each other as husband and wife, and if at that time, if you know, you have family, number two. And then comes your ministry. And I remember him saying, you know, if you ever get that out of sync, I'll call you on it. And it was a simple thing to say, but as I look back, I can see that. And I suppose in terms of the guarding your heart, the importance of my heart relationship with the Father. So my relationship with God, number one. Relationship with my wife, number two. And my family. And then comes my ministry and just making sure that... So that would be a key thing I want to say to a young... Because it was said to me and as a student. Good thing. The whole issue of guarding your heart, although that only came 2001 and become life first. But I would want to say that to somebody and right from the word go, above all else. Because it affects everything else you do from here on in. So you need to know what you're doing to guard your heart and make sure you make that a priority. I'll say it. Things like boundaries... If you want to be in leadership for a short time, knock yourself out.
Right.
go at it. Burn the candle. Do all those. If you want to, like, it's that survive and thrive. If you want to be in this for any sense of long haul, you need to have boundaries. You need to have rhythms. You need to make sure you're looking after yourself physically. You need to make sure you're spending, you know, you have time, quality time with those that matter in your life. You need downtime. You need days off. You need time off. You need halt. All those things, just self-care is really important. Another thing I would say, Alan, this could be misunderstood, but anyway, hold lightly.
Okay, tell us more.
Hold lightly to lots to do with church leadership. People, ways of doing things. I'm nervous. Even sometimes certain beliefs. Because as I sit here as a 50-year-old and I think back to me as 22, 23, 24-year-old, and some things I thought I was really sure on and I held really tight, I would say just hold lightly. And in terms of people, the reason I say that is one of the things I find with church leaders sometimes is we can hold really tightly to people and to things, and then when people let us down or disappoint, like our words fall apart, or when people move on or people whatever, and that almost can sound in when I say hold lightly that it doesn't really matter, don't care, that's not what I'm saying.
But I just, you're not dependent on
correct them. I just would want to say hold lightly.
What would your rule of thumb be? You know, you say about holding lightly to certain beliefs. You know, obviously there are some folk, you know, some folk could interpret that as, well, everything's up for grabs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as you know, there are some Christians and nothing is up for grabs.
Yeah, yeah,
that could
absolutely
even be the time of the service, or the colour of the carpet. Yeah. And there are others for whom maybe too much is up for grabs. Yeah. How would you, what would your rule of thumb be between, in discerning what you hold lightly to and what you say
in terms of belief?
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
Or in terms of...
it's a whole other podcast.
It probably is, Alan, and I'll be honest, I'm almost reluctant to kind of go. I mean, there are core convictions
that I am,
you know, that, let's go to the wall for, let's die for, whatever, you know, and that I really do hold passionately. But those
we'll just give them your email address.
But are those core, are there, like, as I, are there fewer core convictions than I maybe would have had at one stage?
Sure.
Probably.
Yeah, you probably had everything.
Yeah,
everything was
exactly.
In one
big group. And I suppose, I mean, and sorry for banging on, but where the garden of your heart has an influence in this as well. Do you know what I mean? In terms of what you hold tightly to, and if it comes down to things like belief, that I just feel sometimes that you can hit a crisis over certain issues that if you hold incredibly tightly to, I mean, everything can be black and white and very simple, and therefore there's something very nice about that. But if you hold really tightly to a whole raft of things, my experience has been, and this is my experience and my story in a sense, that something will come along that will just shake that a wee bit, and if you're holding incredibly tightly to it, it can just...
The whole thing.
The whole,
collapses.
Like a house of cards.
Yeah.
And I just think... Just be careful and that, but that is not to say I want to in any way give the impression that everything's up for grabs, I don't believe certain, or I'm not strong on certain things. But you're asking me, what would I say to a young David at 23, 24, starting out in ministry, starting out in leadership? One of the key things that I would say is hold lightly.
Okay. And one more book recommendation.
Okay,
good recommendation. I'll allow you a couple.
I mean, one of the books that did have a profound impact at that time, around 2000, was Mark Buchanan's "Your God Is Too Safe," which dealt with things like holy habits, but also the whole idea of, you know, borderland and where we have settled in our faith and all of that. So Mark Buchanan has been somebody, I've never met the guy. I don't know a huge amount.
It wasn't him in the coffee shop.
It wasn't him in the coffee shop, but his writing, so Your God Is Too Safe, definitely is it. His book on Sabbath as well, on rhythms and rest and all of that, has been important to me in terms of other books. I mean, the book Resilient Ministry that I came across in my last sabbatical, which was 2014, were a group of authors had kind of done a number of surveys with lots of church leaders and collated all and discovered five key themes
of resilient ministry. That was, again, a reasonably defining book because it captured a lot of those things we have been talking about, like spiritual formation and self-care and emotional and cultural intelligence and the marriage and family and leadership and management, but it kind of got it all together and I found it. So that would be
that's a really great book. I think it's one that any leader really should.
I think it's across the pond in terms of where it came from, but those things just translate, and as I say, I just have found so I keep coming back to those five because it is a, you know, when we talked about the whole idea of long term and
we'll put a link up to that on the podcast.
I'm sure
there's notes.
There's other books that have put anyway.
But that's great, David. Listen, this has been so rich. It's been absolutely fantastic. I think folk will want to listen to this and listen to it again and stop here and there. You've given us so much to reflect on. You've shared personally and as I say, lots for us listeners to reflect on and be strengthened in our own leadership journey. So thank you and God bless you, and may you soon get your new church premises on the Lisburn Road down there.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you for the opportunity just to chat and talk through some of these issues. It's been really helpful for me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Leadership Journey podcast, and thanks again to David for his time. The podcast has taken a break for a couple of weeks, but we plan to be back at the start of the new year. And in the meantime, thank you for listening and have a wonderful Christmas.